Hello and welcome back. I'm your host, Clara Mawood, and as a content specialist for BCC Research, I'm excited to bring you along as we talk to the companies and individuals who are leading us into the future. We know that you're no stranger to the topic of clean energy and sustainability, but there are many interesting markets under this umbrella that you may have never heard of before. Today's topic covers one such market, zeolites, a group of minerals that have the ability to be readily dehydrated and rehydrated. And according to one of our partners, Verified Market Research, the global zeolites market is set to reach $16.97 billion by 2026. With a market that size, what does it hold for our future, specifically in clean energy? Answering this exact question, amongst many others, is today's guest, Lucy Innes, Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Zeolist International. Producing a wide variety of Zeolist products that have the capacity to be tailored to the needs of their clients, Zeolist International, as well as their parent company, Ecovyst, is here to change the game. Let's dive in. Lucy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Clara. I appreciate you having me on today.
So I love a good origin story. So let's start at the beginning. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and then the origins of both Ecovyst and Zeolist International?
Yes, I sure can. Thank you, Clara, for the introduction. So I'm originally from Essex in the UK. I relocated to the US 17 years ago and currently live in the Philadelphia area with my husband and two daughters. So from a very early age, I was always fascinated with science and technology. My dad was an engineer for a company that developed some really leading edge technologies that are widely used today. So he sparked my initial curiosity in science. And I think that's what really made me want to focus on chemistry and chemistry technologies for my career. So I left school at 16, which is a normal age in the UK, unlike 18 in the US. I'd completed my A-levels then in physics, chemistry, and biology, and then decided to achieve my degree in chemistry. My first real job, as I call it, from leaving college was working for a major oil company. So I joined the quality control department, which was analyzing fuels, such as gasoline and jet fuel, to make sure that they were the right kind of quality to release to customers for sale. So I was doing that for a couple of years, and then my husband and I had the opportunity to move to the US in 2004, which we took. It was supposed to be for 2 years, and here we are 17 years later. It was quite a big move for us, you know, moving from the London area to, at that time, Louisville, Kentucky. At that time, during that move, my career redirected and I moved into a technical sales position, working for an analytical company. And it was a good match because I had used a lot of the equipment in my previous position with the oil company. So I had a good insight as to what the customers were looking for, what they needed. And it also allowed me to travel quite widely throughout the US. So I'm very fortunate I've been able to do a lot of different places. In the last 10 years, I was able to further develop my interest in catalysts through various commercial positions, and I joined Zeolist International as the Vice President of Sales and Marketing in February of 2020. So Zeolist is I would call them a highly innovative company. We have a very broad portfolio of specialty zeolite powders and catalysts, and it's a long-standing partnership between Ecovyst and Shell Catalyst and Technologies. So the partnership between the two companies has been in place for over 30 years.
Wow.
Yes, it's been a long-standing and very successful partnership. So I'll tell you a bit more about Ecovyst as we've recently gone through a transformation. In the summer this year, we repositioned our company as a pure-play catalyst and services company, mainly focused on supporting advances in sustainable initiatives. And this is how the name Ecovyst was born. So eco from acceleration towards a cleaner, healthier world, and vyst from our core catalyst competency. So in my current role, I'm responsible for zeolite powder and catalyst sales, which are used in a really wide range of applications, and some very exciting new emerging ones that are linked to our main topic today, the energy transition.
I'm really excited to dive more into that. And it just makes me laugh a little bit that you kind of started in oil and then kind of had this whole workaround into really clean energy, which I think is great. It gives you a really solid foundation. So I know that this is going to be a fascinating conversation. And not to hold us off any longer, let's dive into some of this technology. So can you explain to our audience what your technology does and then how it contributes to the energy transition that you just talked about?
I certainly can. I think it's probably useful first to give some background on zeolites and what they are.
Yes, let's do it.
Many people have not heard about zeolites. So zeolites are naturally occurring. They were first discovered in 1756 by a Swedish mineralogist. So they mainly consist of a luminosilicate structure, and each type of zeolite has a very unique structure or framework. So there are over 40 naturally occurring zeolites that have been discovered and over 200 that have been synthesized. So they're also known as molecular sieves due to their structure. They have the ability to selectively sort molecules based primarily on size exclusion process. Synthetic zeolites are attractive as they can be produced uniformly and tailored to specific catalytic applications. And they're also free from the impurities that are found in naturally formed zeolites. So they're commonly used in commercial applications such as refining applications, specifically hydrocracking, emission control applications, and petrochemical applications. So regarding how that fits into the energy transition, first of all, I'll explain what is the energy transition. So the energy transition is a push to decarbonize our global energy sector. So to transform it from being dependent on fossil-based energy to becoming zero carbon. So of course, changing our energy sector to zero carbon takes some time. This transition won't happen overnight. It's expected to take into the second half of the century. So zeolites and catalysts can contribute towards the energy transition in a number of ways. So a couple of examples I'd like to cover. As part of the plastic circularity process to reduce the amount of plastic in landfill. So catalytic pyrolysis is one emerging solution that can be used for this. It allows a wide variety of plastic waste to be recycled, and the waste plastic can be processed onto fuels or as precursors for the petrochemical industry. So the waste is broken down to pyrolysis oil by catalytic pyrolysis and then can be further processed onto a wide variety of different applications. So that's one way. A second way, as I mentioned earlier, is zeolites can be used in emission control applications to reduce the tailpipe gases that come from mainly diesel vehicles and act as pollutants in the air we breathe. So in many countries, tailpipe emissions are regulated and they have to be below a certain threshold. And as we move forward, it's expected those regulations will become more and more stringent. So zeolite type technology can be used to reduce those tailpipe emissions and reduce NOx and other contaminants that would go out into the air. So the last example I have for you is that zeolite-based catalysts can be used in the production of renewable fuels, such as renewable diesel and sustainable aviation fuels. There's many, many different ways in which zeolites and zeolite-based catalysts can aid towards clean fuel production and the energy transition.
I love this because I think that a lot of people aren't aware of these applications when they think about sustainability, when they think about clean energy, when they're considering this, you know, the plastic problem that we have. And it's, you know, a mineral compound that you guys have really capitalized on that is making such it's such an imperative part of this process that I'm glad that we're able to discuss it and kind of bring it to light a bit more, because I think people need to be a bit more aware of the role that it's playing. And speaking of that role, now you've kind of touched upon a lot of things, which I think is so neat. And I want to kind of dive a little bit deeper into that last aspect that you mentioned, which is really the role that zeolites play in clean fuels. Because I think when clean fuels come to mind, they kind of think of, you know, hydrogen or solar. So taking a step back, What's the role that zeolites play in clean fuels?
That's a great question, and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think for many people, zeolites are very much an unknown, and they touch on so many day-to-day products. So as far as clean fuels, there's a big acceleration in the market for the supply and demand of renewable fuels. So this is being driven by a focus on sustainability and also by the ease of adaption for consumers. So as of the last few years, there's been readily available biofuels, but there's some disadvantages with biofuels that don't make them readily adaptable. For renewable fuels, they can be a direct replacement for fossil fuels, but with a much lower carbon intensity. So renewable fuels are bio-derived. They're made by hydrotreating non-petroleum materials, such as vegetable oils or animal fats. And the main focus right now we see is on renewable diesel and sustainable aviation fuel. So another driver for this is standards that are being released to aid the transition. So some states like California have released standards. They have the LCFS, the low carbon fuel standards. And this incentivizes refiners in ways such as tax credits to produce low carbon fuels. So the standard is designed to reduce the overall petroleum dependency and also the carbon intensity of the transportation fuel pool. So some states like Oregon and Washington and New York are also proposing similar standards, and Canada announced they'll introduce their clean fuel standard in 2022. So due to standards, credits, increased societal awareness on decarbonization, we're seeing a lot of refiners revamping or expanding their facilities to incorporate renewable fuel production, and it's expected to grow really quickly over the next couple of years. So the feed used to produce renewable fuels can be quite varied. So some examples would be soybean oil, tallow, distillers corn oil. And due to this variety of the feedstock, the fuel may need to be further processed to improve the final fuel properties and make it suitable to be used as a fuel. So this is where the zeolite-based catalysts play a role. The zeolite catalysts can be used to increase the yield for the desired product and also to improve specific properties such as cold flow so that the final fuel can be suitable to be used in cold climates.
That is really neat. And I think it's, so heartening to hear that the renewable energy industry and the clean energy is really ramping up, and then to kind of see the role that zeolites play is really exciting. Now I actually kind of want to go back a little bit, because earlier you mentioned that your products address tail gas pollution from diesel vehicles, and this is definitely, I know, an area of concern for a lot of people. So are you concerned about the rise of EVs, and then how do your products kind of fit into that?
We do closely follow the growth trends of electric vehicles, EVs, and EVs do offer many benefits such as lower emissions. But I think there's also some challenges that still need to be overcome for them to be incorporated more frequently into daily life. So one of those things is the charging infrastructure. It's still in its infancy, so it's still difficult to find charging stations. Electrical grids need to be strengthened to support the charging demand. I think some customers would have range anxiety, so not knowing how long their battery range will last for long distance journeys. And there's still some concerns, I think, about battery safety and durability. So we see the trend towards EV for passenger cars is growing, especially in Europe, because they have some very strong financial incentives in place to purchase EVs. However, I think it's going to take a lot longer to transition to medium and heavy duty vehicles. So for many, many reasons, some of those are the distance and life requirements for the commercial vehicles. Again, the lack of charging infrastructure and the economics around the charging. The time it takes to charge the vehicles, it needs to be commercially viable for these long distance journeys. And then the cost for the fleet owners to transition from standard heavy duty vehicles to electrified heavy duty vehicles. It's going to take a lot of time and investment, I think, before all of these factors are really met. I also read an interesting report recently that compared the total life emissions of an electric vehicle to a vehicle powered by renewable diesel. So electric vehicle batteries as of now, and I know there's a lot of development work in the battery area, but they're mainly lithium ion variants. So they're using elements such as nickel and cobalt and other kind of metals. So the production and processing of these metals that are used in the batteries is an energy intensive task. And I think that's often overlooked when we consider electric vehicles. Also the electricity used to charge the vehicles as of today is typically from a fossil fuel power plant, such as coal powered. So here in the US, for example, around 60% of electricity generated is derived from fossil fuels. So when you weigh up these kind of elements and factor them into the total vehicle life, as they were in the report that I read, the vehicle powered by renewable diesel actually generates lower emissions over its total lifetime compared to the equivalent EV. So I certainly understand the need for cleaner vehicles and why EVs are attractive for this. However, I do see a real need also for more innovation and investment to overcome some of the challenges that I just covered.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think this is a topic that could be a podcast in and of itself. There's a lot there, and you bring a really good point, which is it's a lot more complicated than I think people think. And the concept of clean energy and what that looks like and how we can really make that a thing is complex and has a lot of moving parts, but it really kind of fits under this bigger picture of sustainability. And, you know, we're all working towards a more sustainable way of living so that we can take care of our environment and ourselves kind of long term. And I would like to dive into that a bit because I think that's something else that people might not really know what they mean when they say sustainability, or they might have an idea, but when it comes to application, they don't really know what that looks like. So when customers or consumers talk about sustainability, what is it that they are really looking for? And then how is the industry preparing itself for that?
Yeah, there's a strong momentum to move towards sustainable solutions. I think today consumers are more aware of what they're buying, and they desire greener choices. It's the right thing to do for us and the future of our planet. So our customers specifically are looking for novel ways that possibly impact the environment. So a lot of innovation focus on technological-based solutions that reduce pollution, support the circular economy with recycled and renewable-based products. The key vision of Ecovist is the wellness of our customers and the renewal of the ecosystem. So we partner with our customers on innovative chemistry-based technologies to address the increasing demand for high-performing and sustainable products. We have optimized our business towards green technology with a focus on investing in business technologies that will help us growing and greening. So that's one of our key strategies, is to align ourselves to sustainability initiatives and grow and green at the same time as that. As well as supporting our customers on their sustainability initiatives advances, we also have our own metrics on reducing our own footprint. So we have clear targets, clear initiatives, to address greenhouse gases, waste generation, clean water stewardship, as well as many others. So our sites are engaged on this on a global basis and also actively engaged in communities, in some cases for over 30 years. So we're working on our latest sustainability report and expect to have it released next spring.
I mean, what I love about that, aside from all of the initiatives towards sustainability that you guys are tackling, is just that clarity in communication. And I think that's something that's really important when we do talk about sustainability and what it means to achieve it, because it's such a general topic that you have to get really specific. And speaking of specificity, what do you see as your competitive edge for Zeolist International, for, you know, Ecovyst as a whole? What is your competitive advantage?
I think our main competitive edge is just how much expertise and knowledge we have in the areas that we work. I see that the best way we can support our customers is through close collaboration to align goals. So when you have two companies that are completely aligned as to what each other is trying to achieve and sees the value of each other, you can form a strategic partnership where the output is much more than 1+1. So on a more granular level, I think the first thing we try to do is to fully understand the customer's project and why it's valuable to them, and then develop unique solutions for that project that bring tangible value back to them. So Ecovyst and Zeolist are well positioned on a global basis. We have a wide range of manufacturing and innovation centers and many, many years of proprietary knowledge and expertise in the areas that we serve. We also have some unique abilities to customize zeolites and catalysts for specific applications to drive our customer technologies to the next level of performance.
I think it's that specificity that you're mentioning, the obviously the customization, but then being very, you know, specific in what you guys are able to do and the knowledge behind that, that is definitely going to make it really exciting to see what kind of products really come forth from that, which leads me perfectly to my next question for you, because this definitely would not be a You Should Know This podcast if we didn't talk about the future. So speaking of technologies and emerging technologies, where else do you see that zeolites might be able to play a role?
This might be a bit of a long answer. I mean, there's such a lot of exciting things going on right now where zeolites can be integrated. So I'll apologize in advance for the long answer.
I'm ready for it.
So we already talked a little bit about pyrolysis. So right now, thermal pyrolysis is a commercially available technology. And this is where, you know, waste plastics or other feedstocks are being heated in a low oxygen environment. And instead of burning, it degrades the material to a mix of hydrocarbons called pyrolysis oil. And then this can be further processed for a number of different applications. So another way you can do this is through catalytic pyrolysis. And I would expect catalytic pyrolysis to gain momentum moving forward, because one of the advantages is it can allow a broader variety of plastic waste to be recycled and improve the efficiency of the process. So, you know, zeolite-based catalysts can be used in this regard. I think it's going to take a couple of years to develop the technology to commercialization, but it shows a lot of promise. It would mean things like collection and waste sorting would be a lot easier if the technology is not as specific to the type of plastic. So, and then the oil can be cracked, as we discussed earlier, through also a zeolite-based kind of hydrocracking catalyst and made into fuels or precursors for petrochemical applications. So that's one way. I have two other ways that really come to mind. One, again, is based on clean fuels. So I talked a lot earlier about bio-based feedstocks. So feedstocks being derived from things like soybean oil and tallow, animal fats. But they're not the only options to make renewable fuels and chemicals. So with the decarbonization drive that we're seeing towards producing renewable fuels, it's anticipated this will lead to a shortage in the availability of bio-based feedstocks. And at that time, I think we'll be looking at what other ways can we produce clean fuels and chemicals, and then other ways we start to build momentum. So one example of another way you can make renewable fuels would be through generation of syngas and syngas to methanol or syngas to X. So syngas is a mix of hydrogen and CO2, and the hydrogen can be derived through, you know, green ways. So there's ways called, you know, green hydrogen is produced from the electrolysis of water using solar or wind power as the energy source, and then it can be combined with captured CO2 to produce syngas, and then the syngas can be processed to methanol, and then the methanol can be used in a wide variety of applications, such as to make olefins and propylene, which are the building blocks of chemicals and fuels. That's one other way that I see zeolites playing a role. And the last one I want to touch on is this gaining, I think, more focus. And it's around contaminants in water. So there's an increased focus on some contaminants like PFAS. I don't know if you've ever heard of PFAS before.
Not me personally, no.
Okay, so the long name is per and polyfluoroalkyl substances. So I'm going to stick with PFAS because it's much easier to say. And organizations such as the US EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, are really looking at this more closely. PFAS are known as forever chemicals. They're widely used and long-lasting chemicals that are found in a lot of common household items, such as food packaging, makeup, nonstick cookware. So the issue is that the PFAS take a long time to break down and are now being found to be present in water around the globe. Mm. Yeah, it's not such good news. Of course, we all need water. So there's some studies being done as to are there harmful health effects of PFAS in water that can accumulate in humans and animals. So some early studies show that zeolites can be used to selectively and effectively absorb PFAS from contaminated waters. So there's many more I can go into, but I don't think we have time for today.
No, but it's so heartening to hear about all of these different applications that they can be used in. You know, it's so versatile in that way, which I think is so cool. And I definitely think this is something more people need to be aware of, just as a market and kind of the possibilities that it holds. And then putting it into kind of a bigger picture, looking into the future, what's next for Ecovyst? Because like you said, you guys are very intentional about the technologies that you're utilizing and focusing on and really taking those steps towards a cleaner world, which is, talk about, a big task. So looking into the, you know, the nearer future, what does the next chapter look like for Ecovyst?
Well, we're still going through an exciting transformation from the last few months. I think we see ourselves continuing to build on the legacy we have by providing the high-tech, you know, zeolite and catalyst-based solutions, both for existing markets and for some of the emerging technology drives we talked about today. And one of them supporting the energy transition. So I've covered some of the areas we see, and we will definitely continue to innovate and collaborate with customers for more in addition. So, and I think Ecovyst is also exploring additional, you know, growth opportunities through selective investment in products and technologies that align with our strategic objectives of growing and greening.
I love it. Lucy, thank you so much for your time, for coming on and sharing this and the work that you guys are doing in this industry. I'm really excited about it. I know that our listeners are also going to be very engaged by this. It's wonderful to kind of hear the solutions that are actually being presented and being utilized to kind of combat some of these bigger issues that can be kind of stressful to wrap one's head around. So for people who are more interested in learning about Ecovyst, about Zeolist International, where's the best way that they can connect with you?
We have a lot of really good information on our websites. So you can visit ecovyst.com or zeolist.com. And there we have more information about our company and sustainability, our products. You can also check out our LinkedIn posters and page too. So thank you so much, Clara, for today. I really enjoyed talking with you.
No, thank you, Lucy. And all of those links will be in the show notes, so it's easy for people to have an immediate access to. And once again, thank you for your time and for breaking this down for us. It's been a pleasure.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the You Should Know This podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing or sending us a quick 5-star review. Episodes come out weekly, and we're excited to bring you along as we talk to the companies and individuals who are leading us into the future.